if a person is running under a party affiliation, they should at least represent the values of the party they're aligned with.
The debate over bipartisan coalitions. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, ConocoPhillips and new projects in the National Petroleum Reserve.
In terms of new development in Alaska, the NPRA tend to be the most attractive.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and Alaska's communities and in operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by Apollo MT by Guardian Flight, medevac memberships that protect you or a family member when there is a need for air medical transportation. Information available at apollomt.com.
Governor Bill Walker has appointed his Arctic policy advisor to lead the state's Washington, D.C. office. Craig Fleener will continue advising Walker on Arctic issues. Walker spokeswoman Grace Jang says the move makes sense since Arctic policy is made in Washington. She says Fleener will make $210,000 annually. His current salary is about $120,000. Fleener had been Walker's running mate in 2014 before Walker and Democrat Byron Mallott joined forces. Jang says the Washington office had five staff members under the previous administration and now has two. Fleener replaces Kip Knudsen, a holdover from Governor Sean Parnell's administration, who was booted by Walker last year. Jang says the office's associate director was filling in as director but is leaving. Republican primary challengers in some races for seats in the Alaska House of Representatives fear that Republican control is threatened by members of their own party. They say it's important for majority caucus Republicans to maintain party discipline, but some lawmakers say focusing on constituents' needs can conflict with the party line. Andrew Kitchenman of APRN and KTOO reports.
There are two groups talking about the possibility of a bipartisan coalition: primary challengers who don't want it to happen and Democrats who do. The one group that isn't raising the idea is the so-called Musk-Ox Caucus. It's a group of six Republicans and Democrats who opposed using permanent fund earnings to pay for the budget last year and advocated for cutting oil and gas tax credits this year. Two Musk-Ox incumbents are facing Republican primary challengers. George Rauscher of Palmer is challenging Representative Jim Culver. Homer Mayor Beth Wythe is challenging Representative Paul Seaton. Both challengers say they're concerned about incumbents switching from the Republican-led House majority to a bipartisan coalition. Wythe says Republicans haven't been able to count on Seaton to support party-backed positions.
I am concerned that if a person is running under a party affiliation, they should at least represent the values of the party they're aligned with.
Another candidate opposing Seaton, John Cox of Homer, also is against having a bipartisan coalition, although he says he isn't focusing on the issue.
The bipartisan coalition, of course, would wind up wanting to implement taxes. That's not what we need. We need tax cuts.
Seaton says it's way too soon to talk about a bipartisan coalition. He says he hasn't been in any discussions to form one. Seaton says lawmakers should put their constituents' interests first. But he also notes that he usually voted with his party. He says he voted the same way as House Speaker Mike Chenault on all but four of more than 100 bills that passed over the last 2 years.
You have to take an independent review of each of the bills that you have before you and make a decision based on what the Constitution is and what your basic philosophy is and what you're supporting and your constituents tell you, and that's what I do.
The House majority currently has 22 Republicans and 4 Democrats, while the minority has 12 Democrats and an independent. Eagle River Republican Laura Reinbold doesn't belong to either caucus. Culver says that while he may not always vote with party leadership, he wants to stay in the Republican-led caucus.
I have no plans, and I'm not going to join a bipartisan coalition.
Culver first described lawmakers as Musk-Ox last year, when he and 5 others opposed a move by majority caucus members to use permanent fund earnings to pay for the budget without negotiating a budget with the minority caucus. They gathered again this year to seek cuts to oil and gas tax credits. Culver says corporations are behind accusations of disloyalty. The Accountability Project is an Alaska group that's putting money into efforts to defeat Culver and Seaton. The Alaska Dispatch News reported that the Accountability Project is funded by the Washington, D.C.-based Republican State Leadership Committee, which receives donations from corporations.
The accusation that I'm going to organize with anyone other than the House Republican majority, that's just a false and misleading cover-up for this mischief to bring in this tons of laundered corporate cash from outside.
Culver opponent Rauscher says he and many other Republicans are concerned about a bipartisan coalition. He says that if one formed, it would have a small majority and would likely be ineffective.
It could be an obstructionist coalition more than it would help.
One of the Accountability Project funded groups is named Conservatives for George Rauscher. Rauscher says that while he knows leaders of the group, he isn't coordinating his campaign with it. Talk about a bipartisan coalition isn't confined to races with incumbents. Republican Representative Shelley Hughes of Palmer is leaving her seat to run for the Senate. One of her possible successors, Richard Best, says he's concerned his opponent, Palmer Mayor Delana Johnson, would join a bipartisan coalition.
I actually have great fears of that. I've been on Palmer City Council for 11 years, and six of those has been with my opponent. And to nail down a position sometimes is kind of difficult.
Johnson says she plans to join a Republican-led majority and not a bipartisan coalition. She added that she often can't figure out where Best stands.
To me, it's just obvious what I would be doing. I'd be working for my constituents. I'm a Republican. They're going to elect me as a Republican, and I'll work with the Republican leadership to, you know, try to solve the problems that we have before us.
Legislative caucuses won't formally organize themselves until after the November 8th general election. The primary elections are August 16th. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, or NPRA, was first set aside for oil production nearly a century ago. But it wasn't until last year that the reserve produced its first barrels. That's when ConocoPhillips brought its CD5 unit online. Now the company is hoping to expand production from the reserve with a string of new drill sites reaching ever deeper into the NPRA. One of those projects, Greater Moose's Tooth 1, will start construction this winter. This month, the Bureau of Land Management is launching an environmental analysis of Conoco's most recent proposal called Greater Moose's Tooth 2. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rachel Waldholtz reports.
ConocoPhillips first proposed these drill sites over a decade ago, but the first project, called CD5, ran into hurdles, including negotiations with the village of Nuiqsut over the location of a road through local subsistence grounds. It took 10 years to permit and build, starting production last fall. Now, Conoco is hoping it's full steam ahead. The projects are like stepping stones, each stringing a little further into the National Petroleum Reserve. First came CD5, which sits on Native Corporation land right at the edge of the NPRA. From there, Conoco plans to build a road to Greater Moose's Tooth 1, or GMT-1, which is scheduled to start construction next year.
And GMT-2 is the next step out in development.
That's Conoco's project manager for the NPRA, Jim Brody. Like GMT-1, the GMT-2 site will be a gravel pad with a maximum of about 30 wells, sending oil by new pipelines back to Conoco's Alpine facility, and from there to the Trans-Alaska pipeline. Brody says the sites are some of Conoco's main priorities these days.
In terms of new development in Alaska, the NPRA tend to be the most attractive.
But that doesn't mean they're cheap. Conoco officials joke that $1 billion doesn't go as far as it used to. The entire Alpine field was a $1 billion investment in 2000. Now, each new drill site costs about $1 billion. That's largely because of sheer logistics. The further into the reserve you move, the further from any existing infrastructure, and the more expensive it is. But Conoco has also been frustrated by the pace of the permitting process. In July, Alaska's congressional delegation sent a letter to the Federal Bureau of Land Management saying, essentially, get a move on. On July 25th, the Bureau announced it would start its environmental review, the next step towards approving the project. The Bureau is currently asking the public for input on what it should study. Stephanie Rice of the BLM says two areas of focus will be impacts on climate change and ensuring the project doesn't interrupt Nuiqsut's access to subsistence resources.
The main subsistence resource is going to be caribou and making sure that roads and pipelines and air traffic do not interfere with caribou migration.
Meanwhile, some conservationists aren't thrilled with the project. Marissa Knodel is a climate campaigner with the Friends of the Earth in Washington, D.C. She says the development doesn't line up with the Obama administration's commitments on climate change.
The bottom line is that any new development for oil and gas, like what is being proposed in the National Petroleum Reserve, moves us completely in the opposite direction of where we need to be going in terms of a safe climate future.
The state of Alaska, of course, takes the opposite view, that new oil and gas development is imperative. And right now, Conoco's developments in the NPRA are some of the few potential sources of new oil for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a third lawsuit over air pollution in Fairbanks.
EPA missed its deadline to give notice that Fairbanks has failed to attain its air quality standards.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The company that runs Fairbanks Memorial Hospital has suffered a cyber attack. Banner Health reports the hack potentially compromises financial and personal information of more than 3.7 million patients, customers, and staff in seven states. Arizona-based Banner says it discovered July 7th. That a computer system handling payment card data for food and beverage outlets at some of its over 30 facilities nationwide had been hacked. It says cards used between June 23rd and July 7th may have been affected. A week later, Banner says it learned the cyber attack may also have gotten patient and provider information, including social security numbers. The company says it worked to beef up security and contacted payment card companies to heighten monitoring for fraudulent charges. Banner is offering free subscriptions to monitoring services to those affected. Each of the three main University of Alaska campuses are accredited separately. A study released this week asks, what would it be more cost-effective to bring all of the campuses together under one accreditation? The answer, probably not. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
The report suggests condensing the three accreditations into one would be a monumental process with few benefits. But there are other cost savings options. UA President Jim Johnson says the university is already looking into some of those possibilities.
We've got seven teams working as we speak on four administrative areas and three academic areas to see how we can restructure to reduce cost and drive higher performance.
One option is consolidating administrative departments for academic programs that exist on multiple campuses, such as engineering, teacher education, and business administration.
We have three schools of management. We have three schools of education. Are we going to continue to have those three, or is it going to be somehow changed?
Johnson says condensing the programs would require accreditations on a program-by-program basis, but he's confident that would be possible. The Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities grants accreditation based on certain sets of academic standards. The report notes that even if that commission approves a move to bring the university system under a single accreditation, which is uncertain, the process would take at least 2 years and a significant amount of faculty, staff, and administrative resources to complete. And once the process is finished, the report says there's no guarantee it will result in more students or higher quality programs or meet the state's higher education needs. Regardless of the report's recommendations, Johnson says it's an avenue deserving of a closer look.
I'm agnostic when it comes to three accreditations, one accreditation, 38 accreditations. It's about our mission for the state of Alaska. That trumps everything. everything.
No decisions have been made regarding UA's accreditation strategy, but it's a topic scheduled for discussion at the next Board of Regents meeting in September. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
A bill before Congress would speed up a timberland trade between the federal government and the Alaska Mental Health Trust. It's part of a larger legislative effort to increase logging in the Tongass National Forest. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust uses its land to make money to fund programs around the state. It owns 1 million acres, about a quarter of it in Southeast. Wynn Menefee of the Trust Lands Office says it wants to exchange a little more than 18,000 of those acres that face opposition to development.
Certain lands that we own next to the communities would be given to the Forest Service in exchange. The Trust receiving some lands that are more removed from communities that would allow development without necessarily influencing the communities as much.
The land is near Ketchikan, Juneau, Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, and Myers Chuck on the mainland north of Ketchikan. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council attorney Buck Lindekugel agrees those areas should be closed to logging. He says some listed parcels on or near Prince of Wales should not be part of the trade. But he says he's optimistic those will be replaced.
So far, the trust has been willing to work with folks to avoid those areas of high conflict, and we're hoping that we're able to continue and resolve those issues.
The Mental Health Trust and the Forest Service negotiated the land swap about a year ago. It's already working its way through the bureaucracy. The Trust's Menefee says the trade and subsequent timber sales would allow more than income. He says it will provide logs for the region's mills, which say they don't have enough to continue operations very long.
In order to make this exchange happen in a reasonable time frame, it needs legislation, because if you do it through just a normal administrative process, it could be 7 years or something like that before we get an exchange completed.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski filed the Alaska Mental Health Trust Land Exchange Act in late May.
It was not a question of whether or not the exchange should move forward, but simply to the point of how are we going to assess the value.
The measure is one of a group of recent Murkowski bills meant to increase Tongass logging. Another would create 5 new Alaska Native corporations, each with 23,000 acres of forest land to develop. Other provisions would allow 2 existing Native corporations to sell or swap property that's been logged. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
More Alaska firefighters have gone to the lower 48 as wildfires in western states there intensify. State and federal firefighting agencies in Alaska report that 5 20-person crews were flown south Wednesday. They're joining more than 1,500 people battling the Pioneer Fire in Idaho. The agencies report that 24 Alaska smoke jumpers and 4 crews were earlier deployed to the lower 48. Alaska firefighting aircraft have also been going south, including helicopters, water, and retardant dropping planes. Air quality advocates continue to press the Environmental Protection Agency to address Fairbanks area fine particulate pollution. Representing air quality groups, the law firm Earth Justice notified the EPA this week of intent to sue. Earth Justice attorney Kenta Suda says the action is aimed at forcing the agency to take past due actions.
EPA missed its deadline to give notice that Fairbanks has failed to attain its air quality standards as of the attainment date, and that attainment date was December 31st, 2015. And then EPA must give notice that the borough has been accordingly downgraded to the serious non-attainment category. And as a result, it will have to do more to ensure that it gets into compliance with those national standards.
It's the third time since 2014 that Earth Justice, the Sierra Club, and Fairbanks-based Citizens for Clean Air have sued the agency over Fairbanks' North Pole area air quality. The 2 earlier suits involve a state of Alaska fine particulate pollution reduction plan.
The first suit was successful in the sense that it helped to prompt submission of the plan ultimately. The second suit to reach a determination about whether it was sufficient as an air quality plan is ongoing.
The notice issued this week says the groups will file the additional suit in 60 days if there's no action by the EPA.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters, and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org, where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
A federal government attorney says Alaska's bearded seals deserve to be listed as a threatened species because of climate warming's effect on their sea ice habitat. Robert Stockman of the National Marine Fisheries Service on Today in Anchorage urged the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to overturn a lower court ruling that said bearded seals do not merit the listing. Bearded seals are the largest of the Arctic seals. They use sea ice to give birth, molt, and dive for food. The National Marine Fisheries Service listed bearded seals as threatened in 2012. U.S. District Court Judge Ralph Beislein in 2014 ruled the listing was improper. He said the agency had not demonstrated that bearded seals faced a serious threat of extinction before the end of the century. The Yukon River Fall Chum Run is coming back stronger than initially predicted. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game's preseason projection called for a fall chum run size of 660,000 fish, which would have been below average for an even year fall chum run. But Fish and Game Yukon fall season manager Jeff Estenson says that once managers got a look at the summer chum run, the outlook for fall chum became quite a bit rosier.
We do have a very good relationship between the summer chum run and the fall chum run, looking back over historically. And we can take the summer chum run, which came in pretty strong this year, a little bit stronger than what we thought, and we were able to use that relationship. And we did adjust our preseason projection to 800,000 to 900,000 fish, so it actually went up a little bit.
With the stronger run size projection, fishery managers have, as of this week, opened subsistence fishing around the clock throughout much of the Yukon River drainage. Estenson acknowledges that subsistence fishermen may need more opportunities to meet their needs this year, due in part to problems caused by all of the recent rainfall across western and interior Alaska.
We want them to have every possible opportunity to go out and get the fall chum for subsistence. And, you know, we don't want weather or a rainy day when it's open and then sunshine when it's closed to play any factor whatsoever in people getting what they need for subsistence for fall chum.
The first pulse of fall chum is approaching District 5 on the Upper Yukon now. The first pulse came into the river in mid-July. Despite the early timing, Estenson says subsistence fishermen are reporting high-quality fish in their catches. A second pulse has been detected at the mouth and is now passing pilot station. The total passage estimate at the pilot station sonar is up to just over 400,000 fish as of Wednesday. Driving the Americas is a once-in-a-lifetime adventure for most who undertake the epic journey from the southern tip of South America to Alaska's North Slope. But for one couple who recently completed the trip in a Volkswagen van, travel is a way of life. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Ben Jammin left behind an IT career to work and travel around the world, but when he decided to drive from southern Chile to Alaska, he wasn't expecting a multi-year journey. The now 34-year-old native of the British Isle of Jersey speaks fondly of the VW bus that changed his life.
This is our 1992 Volkswagen Combi, made in Brazil. We picked it up in Chile, and it's been our home for the past 4.5 years.
Jammin met his partner, Leah Airy, along the way, one of the many who have shared and supported the 50,000-mile Pan-American road trip.
Actually, that's part of the project of this Hasta Alaska journey, which means until Alaska in Spanish, to try to do it on a budget. And so we shared the vehicle with over 100 people since we left Chile. And that way we all chip in for the gas and we all chip in for the food.
So we can live really, really cheaply in the van. Like, we don't really spend that much at all, maybe just on food and maintenance.
really?
Yeah, most of our money goes on maintenance, but people wouldn't believe that you can actually travel that cheaply, and it makes it affordable. We can actually afford to visit these places and have these experiences of a lifetime.
The journey has included surfing and other fun hogging played out in laptop-produced combi life videos on YouTube.
So sit yourself down and buckle up. This is one heck of a ride.
Jamin and Airy have honed the art of roadside video production, weaving together images, narration, and music into an engaging adventure tale full of ups.
Yes, in Alaska, we're going to Alaska.
And downs.
So that was the good news, now for the bad news.
We've had a fire in the combi. This is every Volkswagen owner's worst nightmare. We've been
The couple says their YouTube channel generates about $10 to $15 a day, not enough to fund things like rebuilding a fried out combi or taking their dog to the vet. But supporters have stepped up in a big way with cash and other assistance, including Alaskans who helped Jamin secure a new visa.
We wrote to the governor and to this senator, and you know, it was just everybody was appealing on our behalf. And eventually, when we went to apply for a visa again, they said that they'd heard about our situation and they gave us one. And that's really with the help from the Alaskan people, that's why we're here today exploring this amazing state.
Being on the receiving end of so much goodwill, the combi crew also gives back, from raising money for a cancer patient to teaching kids to slackline and sharing their travel skills.
We try to inspire people to not so much follow in our footsteps, but just to open up their minds into what's possible in their environment. Not everybody's in a position to take off across a continent in a Volkswagen van, and I wouldn't recommend it.
That sentiment reflects the 10 engine rebuilds their bus has had. Jamin and Airy plan to tour Alaska for the rest of the summer, then randomly select one of their supporters to give their now famous combi to. The couple says their next adventure may be sailing. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Rachel Waldholz and Josh Edge in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Tim Bodoni in Galena. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program. The primary election is August 16th. Polls are open at 7 a.m. till 8 p.m. You will be voting for United States Senator, United States Representative, State Senator, and State Representative. When you go to vote, bring identification. If your name is not on the list or you don't have ID, you may vote a question ballot. The question ballot updates your voter registration. If you need language or other assistance while voting, ask the election board or bring someone to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.